could I just clarify one thing? Because this is really interesting. I hadn't really thought about it before. I don't know that anybody brought it up to me. So do we know right now whether or not there's a greater or different benefit of adding a CDK inhibitor to hormonal therapy in patients who've never had hormones as opposed to those who have, even if it's not in the metastatic setting, the typical situation where somebody recurs on adjuvant hormonal therapy? Has it been looked at whether there's a difference in benefit of CDK?
The proportional benefit is the same. If you look at all three first-line trials that have been done, meaning Paloma 2, Monarch 3, Mona Lisa 2, about 20-30% of patients within those trials had de novo disease. And proportionally, the magnitude of the benefit from the addition of a CDK4/6 inhibitors in those cases was just as good, if not perhaps even a little bit better, than what you've seen with endocrine therapy alone. However, I think, and that's the part that hasn't been quite looked at, I think if you were to just subtract those patients and look at them individually, even though the hazard ratio would probably be similar, I think the benefit in terms of months of disease progression would be very impressive on both arms, where you'd probably see 40-something months of benefit from the addition of a CDK4/6 inhibitor and a good 2-3 year run with just endocrine therapy alone. So proportionally, I think the benefit is there and is the same. But when you look at the benefit that these people get from a month to month kind of deal, obviously they do a lot better than the ones that have never had endocrine exposure. It's very similar to what happened if we were to make a parallel with the use of trastuzumab and pertuzumab in the CLEOPATRA study for first-line treatment of HER2-positive disease, where within that study, a lot of the patients had never had exposure to trastuzumab before, and they were the ones that really drove the overall survival benefit that we see there. But if we were to just look at the ones that already were trastuzumab exposed in the adjuvant setting, from a hazard ratio point of view, they did just as well. When you look at their progression-free survival, it's not as great as the ones that never had seen trastuzumab before. So it's all about the context, but proportionally, the benefit is the same.
So I always love hearing new thoughts, and this is completely new. I think it's really interesting. So let me ask you, for example, do you feel less strongly about adding a CDK inhibitor to a woman who's never had hormonal therapy, who's presenting up front? You know, maybe there's a copay issue, but, you know, do you feel more comfortable? Do you have patients who you don't use a CDK inhibitor?
Absolutely. So a typical example is exactly what you said. A postmenopausal woman who has bone-only disease, is not symptomatic, lives far, doesn't really want to be bothered, has a number of other medications and is already on the donut hole. I don't want to add something else. I feel very comfortable not using a CDK4/6 inhibitor in first line for somebody like that. I don't think these medications, in the bigger scheme of things, it's very hard to prove overall survival benefit from the addition of targeted agents to endocrine therapy. And I don't think we'll ever see that. But within that thought process, what that tells me is this is not a mandatory thing. It's an option. And I think, you know, we need to let doctors be doctors. And not all patients are going to have a terrific benefit. If you were to do an exercise where you take a woman like the one I mentioned, like a postmenopausal woman, oligometastatic disease, confined to the bone, whatnot, and never seen endocrine therapy before, you keep her on endocrine therapy, chances are she's going to have a good 2-3 years before she develops progression of her cancer. And at that point, based on a number of now phase 3 clinical trials that have been done in second line, we know that she would get proportionally a good benefit from adding a CDK4/6 inhibitor at that point, along with fulvestrant. So if you count the number of months that you'd benefit from an AI, then from fulvestrant and a CDK4/6 inhibitor, and then potentially everolimus and another AI or continue fulvestrant, whatnot, I suspect that we're going to see a very similar progression-free survival overall on endocrine therapies in general, compared to somebody who uses a CDK4/6 inhibitor in first line, let's say, hypothetically, fulvestrant and everolimus in second line, and then you kind of like, well, then what do? I go to chemo. So all in all, I think that combined progression-free survival is probably very similar, regardless if you use a CDK4/6 inhibitor in first or in second line. So I don't feel compelled to use a CDK4/6 inhibitor up front on everybody, particularly people with de novo disease, which are bound to do well with endocrine therapy for a long time.
That's interesting. Although, you know, you hear these arguments about, I was flashing on maintenance rituximab and follicular lymphoma. You know, what's the value of actually delaying progression or relapse? And, you know, from a quality of life, psychosocial point of view, certainly that's something to think about.
Oh, plus the financial toxicity. But I think the bigger scheme of things, if with more mature data, which I doubt we would see it, but with more mature data, we figured out that there's indeed no overall survival advantage for using these agents in first or in second line. As I said, it is not mandatory. And I think we have to individualize recommendations based on the patients that we are seeing. I think the brunt of patients will still probably get a CDK4/6 inhibitor as first line, but I can easily see a 10-20% of people that may not need to go down that road.
So I don't know how much we're going to even get to talk about HER2-positive disease, but I'm curious about your thoughts that you were talking about in terms of Cleopatra. So does that mean that if you have a patient who presents with metastatic disease, as opposed to somebody who had prior anti-HER adjuvant therapy, if they present without having been treated, you're more likely, do you ever not give them pertuzumab?
No, and that's a very different situation because there is survival benefit with the addition of pertuzumab. So that's very different. I'm talking about a situation in ER-positive disease where we don't see a survival advantage. So in HER2-positive cancer, it's a different beast where the addition of pertuzumab in first line has been associated with impressive survival benefit. And I would feel very strongly that everybody needs to be exposed to pertuzumab in first line, regardless of prior trastuzumab exposure or not.